7th Avenue Pizza, the official pizza of the Soda Pod.
The Soda Pod, the official beer and hockey podcast of 7th Avenue Pizza.
What is going on? We have our first installment here of the MNCAA season recaps, leading off here with the St. Cloud State Huskies. Of course, Nick Maxson flipping it around here. He is no longer in the host's chair. I'm asking the questions. But no,
that feels weird.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. It's actually honestly, man. I've learned that being a guest on a podcast is like way more enjoyable than being the person running a podcast. Like it is just like, okay, I'm just going to sit here and whatever direction you point me, I'm going to run.
Pretty much. Right. It's so weird when you kind of see it from both ends, and you know, when you're the guest, you know, you kind of just get handed it to you, right? You get the ball on the tee. Whereas, you know, when you're in the host chair, you are the driver, you are the director of everything, and you have to be able to pivot. It's an interesting perspective to be on both sides, but we had enough of Max Veach pumping up UMD over St. Cloud State during the season, so figured I had to jump in and save face for the Huskies here on the off-season recap.
I mean, I think there's a lot of room for saving face for both programs, but
that's true.
We'll torment Veach in the coming weeks here. Well, let's lead off with you here, and I mean, kind of cheesy, but sentence or two. How do you characterize this St. Cloud State Husky season?
So in Shakopee, there's this amusement park called Valley Fair, and they have this ride called the Wild Thing. That's about it, honestly. Incredibly inconsistent, and we saw that highs and lows throughout the year, really, Scott. So that's about as, shall we say, wrapped up in a summary. That's about as best you can describe it.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's actually almost like opposite too, because the Wild Thing starts on a real high note and then it's just nuts from there. And I don't know, it felt like a really weird year, especially for St. Cloud, because I don't know, like, it's college hockey. Every team is going to have their ups and downs and inconsistencies. Like, these are young kids. But I feel like, you know, barring the guy that's obsessed with like mid-20s players who's now across the border in Wisconsin, I really feel like St. Cloud for a while has been one of the programs that maybe they're not going to be the best team in the country, but you know what you're getting with them, and it's going to be fairly consistent throughout the season if you look at the holistic picture. And this is the first year where I really did not see that.
No, and I talked to Brett Larson after the season very much in depth. And, you know, to kind of give you some detail with that, Scott, St. Cloud State over Brett Larson's tenure, and really historically for the last maybe 10 years, has had a really good showing in the non-conference schedule. The NCHC, as everybody knows, is an absolute gauntlet. And, you know, the non-conference kind of helped buoy them the past couple of seasons into the top 10, where they were an NCAA bid contender and, you know, did fairly well in the NCHC conference schedule. This year, they had a really, really tough time in non-conference. They got swept by Mankato, were 2-4 after the first six games. A lot of questions. They got a week off. And then they went 7-0-1 in the NCHE schedule up until the holiday break. However, some asterisks, right? Despite how great that record looks, we never played North Dakota. We didn't play Denver. The biggest bright spot was that second weekend when you go into Kalamazoo in Western Michigan and you sweep them, something they haven't done since 2019. That's a really tough barn to play in. So it felt like, okay, we started off, as you mentioned, right? Kind of slow. We didn't really get that excitement that you look for in the roller coaster, but now we're starting to build some momentum here. And then you start off out of the gate with Denver, North Dakota. You can't get a win from them. You had a really tough January and a really tough early February. I think they went winless in 7 or 8 games. Just not great. You started to pick things up again towards the end of the regular season, made a decent push towards the Frozen Faceoff. You took Denver to overtime, the eventual national championship winner. But really it comes down to that lineup also was inconsistent. Dominic Bass, he brought in from Colorado College, the big 6'6" netminder, a draft pick of the Chicago Blackhawks, just fell apart. And they went with the freshman Isaac Posh, who I think is a freshman. I think he played well. But even the defensive pairings, the forward pairings, they just never locked into a night-by-night roster, which Brett Larson usually likes to do, especially towards the holiday break and then certainly second half of the season. So you could see it. And even Brett Larson admitted, we never really got the consistency. We never got the look we wanted to on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, and there's certain things you can't control there, right? And the schedule, I think, makes a huge difference. Like you said, not just coming out of the holiday break and playing the top two teams, arguably, in the NCHC, but it's also like, I don't know. I feel like North Dakota was a way different team in the back half than they were in the front half, which I think is going to be the new norm now that they're just going to start abusing the transfer portal, especially when we talk about goalies every year. That's always kind of the running joke is, who's the top goalie available? He's going to Grand Forks. but talk to me looking comparatively. I know they just recently released the schedule. I don't know how much of a glance you've already taken at that for the upcoming 2024-2025 season. Does it line up any more favorably on paper?
You know, when you say favorable, right? I think for St. Cloud, you know, the thing for me was they want to start with a bang, and they didn't do that this year. So they get an exhibition with the Gophers. I think that's a great first game. It's not, you know, University of Alberta or some of these Canadian, you know, type stuff. I'm really glad that the NCAA amended that rule to play another NCAA program as an exhibition. And then the first real test is at St. Thomas, who that's a team that's it's not going to be a pushover. We'll put it that way. That's a team that's on the rise. They get Bemidji State early. They get Michigan, and then Augustana for the first time. So St. Cloud gets some early, shall we say, CCHA, and then Boston College. That's not an easy schedule, Scott, in the non-conference, but I like it. I like the big names, especially the Wolverines and Boston College, both teams in the Frozen Four this year. And then again, the first half, you do get North Dakota for the first half this season. And then Arizona State making their first trip to the Herb Brooks National Hockey Center really much the second week after the holiday break. You get North Dakota again, Kalamazoo. You get Denver only once. So on paper, you could say maybe yes, but those are tough opponents too. But I think St. Cloud with Brett Larson and his wantingness to keep the schedule competitive, again, I think that non-conference start will pretty much tell us where the team is going. And it's not going to be an easy schedule for them coming into the NCHC schedule there towards the early parts of November.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of ways you can look at whether the schedule is favorable too. Like, I feel like, and you can correct me or expand on this, but I feel like part of the reason that the slow start was so impactful is it was games they were expected to win. And they came out 2-4, and they limped out 2-4. Like, that was a generous 2-4. Whereas the schedule we're talking about for next year, even if they come out with a bad record, they're playing big programs. They're getting the tune up early. And if you come out of that losing, you can still like hold your head high, be like, it's okay. Like, we weren't coming in as like flat out favorites. Instead, you know, like you said, St. Thomas last year, who outside of Ryan Stieg, no one was pumping their tires, at least out the gate for the season. And then you've got Mankato that just got decimated over the summer. Like, those are games that a St. Cloud State team with expectations, you got to win those games. And that's pretty demoralizing and deflating for the guys in the locker room. Whereas at least comparatively, this is a little bit easier to stomach if they do still have a slow start.
True. And that's, speaking of Minnesota State, not in the schedule for St. Cloud this year. That's a bit surprising. Yeah, a little bit probably. But, you know, to your point, the CCHA and those losses to the CCHA schools really hurt them in terms of the pairwise comparisons this past year, right? So you're going to go up against Michigan, who's always, you know, been pretty good in the Big Ten. Of course, Boston College again. I think we know what happened with them this season. They're going to be another good program despite some of the turnover they're going to have. They're in good hands there with what they're doing out there at Out East. So it's going to be tougher competition, but you hit it on the head, right? If you come out of that with maybe not the best record, I think it's not going to weigh you down as much as maybe some of the things did last season, just strictly based on schedule.
Yeah. And talk to me about some of the players this year. Again, going in, when the team has expectations, there's definitely players that you're putting that emphasis behind. Who either over or underperformed, like notably, what you were expecting from them this season?
I think underperformed would have to be Dominic Bassi. I think the team really was looking for him to just take the net and hold it for the year. Now, mind you, his inconsistencies were something that we saw as an opponent of his when he was at Colorado College, right? But typically, you know, as you get older with a goaltender, you start to kind of iron out. You become more consistent as you play more games. And again, after the tough start in the second half, St. Cloud gave Posh a start. And then he got back-to-back starts against Western Michigan. Somehow Cam Rowe saves a goal that I still can't believe that they called that no goal back in February. But he played well enough and essentially stole the net from him. I think that was probably the biggest thing, Scott, was the goaltending piece. And I can't really fault Isaac Posh, nor should anybody, about you know, him being a young kid. I think he did just about, if anything, he did more than what was asked of him after taking over for him. Other guys, I think, really stepped up this past year. Kyler Kupka, I thought, had a really good season. Werner Mietinen is a freshman, I think, defied expectation as a true freshman, playing in the top six role, played with his brother, VD Mietinen, who's now off overseas playing professional. Those are guys that I think really were anchor points in terms of the good and the bad. Maybe most notably, Scott, is Dylan Anhorn. It wasn't the same production, and I'm not sure if I can fault him for that because he had special chemistry with Grant Cruikshank last year. I just think the roster was better constructed to really showcase his talents. And then after the injury, he looked fine. I don't think it was anything injury related. I just don't think he had the same chemistry with some of those roster players that really was a big part of the reason he had such a big number season last year.
Yeah, and all of that's very fair. I think the one silver lining we can pull from that is, instead of riding Bassi, you've at least gotten to see what Posh brings. You got him a little bit of experience, and he's at least in a position that if he's the guy you're going to ride next year, he's not coming in cold.
Right.
Do you expect him to be the one basically running the crease? Or,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so talking with Brett, that's his net right now. Now, mind you, they brought in Charlie Glockner, who's a transfer from Northern Michigan. He's a fifth year, so 1 year left. They also have a commitment from a USHL goaltender, but they also have James Gray, who will be a redshirt sophomore this season. So they've got three solid goaltenders, and you're right about splitting time, right? St. Cloud is not far removed from having David Renick, who had the net the entire year, got injured, and then they had to go play Quinnipiac the year before they won the national championship in Allentown, and essentially their goaltender was in cold, and you could see that, you know, it felt like the moment was maybe not best set up for success with him. So I expect Posh to be the number one goaltender, but it wouldn't be surprised if early on there was a couple of games here and there where you try to get somebody else to get some time just to be prepared for what happens if Isaac Posh were to, hopefully not, but if he does ever suffer an injury.
Yeah. And then for the fans of the Huskies who also happen to also be tortured Minnesota Wild fans, said also like seven times there. So also. let's talk about Jack Peart, who, I don't know. I'll regurgitate the words of prospect whisperer spoke Z. Came in and didn't necessarily wow anyone, like objectively, as a freshman. But when you consider that St. Cloud does not bring in true freshmen, and he actually held his own and played big boy minutes, and did he stand out? No. Did he look out of place? No. So, like, that's a win.
Yep.
Sophomore year takes a big step really starts showing, like, okay, there's progression here. Do you agree that the junior year, he pretty much just flatlined, plateaued, and just didn't play bad. He just didn't really improve at all.
I think there's a couple of different lenses you could look at that. One, remember, his big step was when Anhorn went down, is he really became the de facto number one defenseman, and that really pushed him to develop another side of his game, which was skating the puck out, you know, leading the rush. That was something that Jack Peart really never possessed. And then when Anhorn decided to return, and he's still counting out de facto number two, Jack Peart, it's not that he didn't get better, but I just don't think he was in that number one position where I really was able to unlock some of his tools that he was building on. And to further prove that, Scott, when you watch Jack Peart, he's not an Anhorn. He's not, you know, a Quinn Hughes. You know, he's not a Cale Makar. He is a guy that goes and he eats minutes, and he's more of a defensive defenseman with, you know, good IQ. He reads the plays coming at him well. He makes the simple plays, but as you mentioned, he's not a wow factor defenseman. He's more of that, you know, just sit back and I'm just going to protect the net type defenseman. I think he really does that well. He battles hard in the corners. He can win puck battles. He can make good first passes. He can stretch the ice. But on top of that, Brett Larson and crew knew he was going in December. All indications were that the Wild development staff had met essentially during the holiday break, and the decision was, I don't know if it was formally made, but essentially made, you know, essentially known that they felt like he was ready. And he signed, as you know, with the Wild. He's on an ATO with the Iowa Wild and just scored his first pro goal. So I think he's ready for that next step. And that's the thing, right, is in college, especially in the NCHC, you're playing great talent, which is awesome. But I think for defensemen who I think develop a little bit, shall we say, later, I think he does need to face a little bit higher of offensive skill coming at him. I think he needs to be forced to make plays a little bit faster to see what he's really got. I think he's going to be a good defenseman. The question is, you know, spending a year probably in Iowa, what's he going to do as development from there? I think that's his next big step.
Yeah, and it's good to hear you say that you do feel like he was ready for the next step, because you always wonder, and obviously, like, you're not going to bring in a guy that's like just completely not ready, but it was the last year. He could have walked after next season. Like, are the Wild just trying to maintain an asset, or was it truly time? Like, do you feel like, let's say the contract wasn't a matter of discussion and he could have come back for a senior year, was there anything for him to gain from a senior year at St. Cloud? Or was he truly like, no, it's time. He's got to move on.
So if you look at the way St. Cloud's roster is going to be quite a bit different this next season, right? So again, Anhorn aged out. He could have stayed and been the de facto number one, right? However, we talked about his game being the number one defenseman with St. Cloud. I think he showcased that when he's in that role. I don't know if staying in college and playing very similar talent, I don't know if there's development opportunity there, right? So I think the way the Wild were looking at this, and I agree with this, is we've seen it, and I think it's a big part of why the discussion was happening, you know, halfway through the season. I think they felt, yep, we've seen it. We can see him playing different roles. He can be that shutdown D. He can lead a rush. We can play him in different situations if we have to. And I do think there is a time where if you're in the development side, you look at it and say, I think he's maxed out. I don't look at it as the Wild trying to protect an asset, because at the end of the day, the Wild don't have a ton of cap room the last time I checked, right? The other thing that I also know is their defensive prospect pool is a little bit shallow right now, if you actually look at their depth chart. So Jack Peart, as we talked about before, he's not an offensive type defenseman. He's not going to bring you know, a ton of point production offensively. He's kind of like a Jonas Brodin in the sense where he goes out, does his job. He kind of does it quietly. He doesn't flash on the screen, but he's going to be, as Jacques Lemaire once said, a 50-point guy, which means he's going to score probably three but prevent 47. That's going to be his role if he ever makes it to the NHL.
Yeah, and I do feel like, because I don't disagree, I would counter that it's doing him a little discredit when we, because for some people, they just hear not offensive. They're like, oh, this guy plants in front of the net and that's his job. I feel like what he does really well is the transition game. And that's not even necessarily saying like center ice, right? Not neutral zone. I'm talking like he's coming out of his end from behind the net. He is hitting those stretch passes. He is seeing the ice correctly. Like you said, he has a really good hockey IQ defensively. He has that same acumen offensively. I just don't feel like once the team is set up and established in the offensive zone, maybe that doesn't shine through nearly as much. But when you talk about the importance, especially once you get to the next level playing pro hockey, that ability to really enable your forwards to go off and do what they need to do gets overlooked by, I hate to throw out like casual, but like the more casual fans, right? The people that are just looking at what's the box score? What am I seeing when the team gets scored on? What am I seeing when my team scores? Like, you miss a lot of the things in between. And I feel like that is a really big calling card for a guy like Jack.
And you hit the nail on the head. And, you know, it's not about the points, but to get in the offensive zone, you got to get it out of your defensive zone, right? Mm-hmm. And even for casual hockey fans, look at the Stanley Cup playoffs. Look at the teams that are struggling. They're the ones that can't break the puck out. They're the ones that don't have a deep defensive core, right, that can make that first pass or sometimes read the play and say, you know what, I don't have a passing option. I'm going to use my feet, maybe draw attention to me. That might open someone up, or heck, let me get it to the red line, let me dump it in, and then we can go out and chase, right? It's about puck management and situational awareness, and Jack Peart has that at a high level. And, you know, to again reiterate, right, I think he did max out his learning curve in college, which is why Minnesota went out and said, hey, you know what, we think you're ready to go to the next challenge. I think he's ready for it. And I do think he's going to blossom in the spotlight. Again, we forget that Herb Brooks National Hockey Center is an Olympic sheet, right? Where, and that makes a big difference. There's a lot more room in the corners. The rinks are wider. I think if there's one adjustment Jack is going to have to make pretty quickly is that shortened, you know, ice, especially width-wise. He's going to have to be making plays a little bit faster. He's going to have to make those decisions quicker. I think he can do it, and I think he's a guy that with his IQ and the way that he processes the game, he can do that and adjust just fine.
Well, it's funny because that's like kind of the double-edged sword, right? That's going to make it a little bit tougher transition to how he does move the puck up ice, like I was just talking about. But defensive game, it's only going to dial him in even more, and it's going to enhance that piece. So something that hopefully, again, all Wild fans are hoping pans out, because you said it before, the defensive prospect pool, like, not looking awesome, which is crazy because 2 years ago everyone was goo goo gaga over it. And it, I think it's because of another thing you said earlier that I completely agree with. Defensemen take time, man. Like,
they do.
Not everyone is Brock Faber who just jumps in and is ready to go, right? There's so, like, I came in loving Brock Faber, really high on his future. I did not think that he would be half of what he's been this year. He has been otherworldly, and I hate that, like, a guy like him, a guy like Quinn Hughes, a guy like Cale Makar, they set these ridiculous expectations for fans where, oh, why can't you just do it right away? They all did it. Well, guess what? They're in the 1% of the 1%. Like, let's not do that. Most defensemen take a lot of time. Like, the example that I always throw out when people are freaking out at me and Z on Judd's Buds, Chris Letang was not a good defensive defenseman. His first like 3 years in the league, he was worse than like people that just were down my throat about Kalen Addison. Like, Chris Letang was worse.
He was.
You can learn that. That takes time. That takes getting actual in-game experience. You're going to have to take your lumps. You're going to have to fail. As long as you're taking things from those failures, like, the only way to grow is failure. If you're not failing, that means you're either the Cale Makar or the Sidney Crosby of what you do, and you're just too good to fail. Or for the rest of the world, you're going to fail on your way to greatness. And I think that a lot of the defensemen, like, I still think Carson Lambos is going to be a monster.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a couple years, guys. That's just how it works. But let's sit back and see, I guess.
Yeah, and again, we forget how big these steps are, right? From college to even the American Hockey League. It's not you're walking up one step. It's half the staircase, right? That's really what the talent and the skill discrepancy still is between college hockey and even the minors. And then again, it's that same gap between the minors and the pros, right? So it's tough. But I do think for Jack Peart, I think if there's any sort of hopeful Wild fans, he's got to be at least one or two in the depth chart for next season, right? So if there's injuries or, you know, say a Declan Chisholm, who I expect to be re-signed.
I like him a lot.
I do too. I think there's a lot of upside with him, but say, you know, he's also not the strongest defensive defenseman, right? And if you want to give yourself another look, Jack Peart could be that call-up where you bring him in as maybe a different look to maybe settle things down defensively. I think he might get a look depending on where the Wild is at. Plus, their cap crunch, so he'd be a cheap addition, right? So that might get him an opportunity. But I would think that he's going to get a little bit. I don't expect him to make the team out of training camp, but I do think he's going to be, you know, just a couple of maybe phone calls away for Bill Guerin, barring injuries or underperformance, that he might get a look at the NHL levels, maybe as soon as next season. We never know.
Kid might get well acquainted with 35W.
Yeah. I'm very familiar with that drive myself, especially down to the Des Moines area. Yes.
It's different. We'll just say that.
Yes.
Couple quick trips on the way, though, which I'm all about.
Yes, lots of them.
All right. So let's talk then about not the immediate future. Mm-hmm. Actually, maybe we should start there. Let's talk the immediate future. Are there any guys, transfer portal guys, that are committed and hopefully jumping in next year? Like, are there any difference makers that you see jumping in next year?
I think for me, the big difference maker that's going to jump in is going to be Austin Bernevik. He is one of their earlier picks. Now, mind you, St. Cloud, again, they don't have the scholarship money maybe as other Minnesota schools, Gophers, have. So they, when they get a high-level forward commit and they get him early, they generally let them marinate in the USHL, and they've done that with Austin Bernevik. He was a part of the U.S. National Team Development Program, and he at one point was leading the entire USHL in goal scoring and in points. So he's a gamer. He's a guy that has one hell of a release, and he's going to be probably an impact player right away. The other one, Thor Bufflin, and yes, you heard that right, a Bufflin. I believe there is a relation. I think it's cousin or nephew or something like that. He's going to be a mobile defenseman that comes in on D. So he's going to be like an Anhorn in terms of his play style. But I do wonder, again, with freshmen, how well can you assimilate to the college level of play? It's faster. It's more physical. The NCHC we know is a gauntlet. But I do think he's going to be good enough to make an impact player himself. Another one that I'm going to look at is the former Andover kid, Gavin Thorson. This guy is a playmaker. He's a setup guy. And with St. Cloud, you know, with Bernevik coming in, I would love to see those two together just to see just someone feed Bernevik the puck.
Tell me if I'm wrong here, but just, and my views of him are limited. I watched him in the state tourney runs that Andover kept on having, which was interesting. It's a nice taste of new blood, but he strikes me as a guy who runs hot. His wires cross really fast, and when it's working, it's great. When it's not, it's like very chaotic and detrimental. I'm really interested in a league like the NCHC. Mm-hmm. That is juicy. Like, there are a lot of teams where that's going to make for some real fun viewing, one way or the other.
So if you don't recall, St. Cloud has had a number of guys pass through the system by the name of Ashawn. So, you know, Jack Ashawn now with the Colorado Eagles, he spent some time with the Boston Bruins. And then now Grant Ashawn, his younger brother, the last, I believe, of the Ashawn brothers, who also runs, shall we say, sometimes with a short circuit. But they do it intelligently. And from what I see with Gavin Thorson, he does it intelligently. Mind you, with Waterloo this year, who is a pretty good hockey team this year, he's got 65 points in 60 games. He's a plus 21. But he also has 87. Yeah, 87 pims. So, and you know, if you can be a Brad Marchand like, meaning you can have that, you know, a little bit of skill, but also get underneath the opponent's skin, that works really well in the NCHC. Again, there's a lot of talent in this league, but you have to also be able to hold your own. And for someone that's only listed at 5'8", I think you do have to play with a little bit of an edge if you're going to be that size. Now, granted, he's filled, right? He's not lanky. He's built like a tank, but I think to not get pushed around, you do have to play with an edge. And Gavin Thorsman strikes me as a guy that I think will fit in really well that way. Just as long as, you know, the penalties that you're taking, shall we say, aren't in the offensive zone or, you know, ill-timed, he'll be just fine.
Nice. Okay. So then let's talk just bigger picture, not next season, but I'm talking the next 3 to 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know that you and Noah have had Brett Larson on several times. I know just from talking to you off air, like, you're a believer. Like, this is a guy that knows what he's doing. He's running this the right way. We're still seeing, like, again, good seasons, bad seasons. That's college hockey, right?
Yep.
Talk me through, though, your expectations. Like, 3 to 5 years from now, what are we looking back and saying on this stretch? Is it something where you feel like it's trending the right direction, or are there concerns with how, I mean, it's a shifting landscape with college sports in general, but college hockey is getting a big dose of that.
It is. If there's one thing I think Brett Larson and the St. Cloud coaching staff have realized, and they've already been doing this for a while, is they know who they are and they know what to do with their resources, right? You can make that same argument with Duluth. You can make that same argument with some of the other smaller schools who still attract good talent. Maybe Bemidji State had a really nice, you know, renaissance year this year. It's all about how you sell the program. And I think St. Cloud knows, you know, they're not going to go out and get, you know, like a Macklin Celebrini. They're not going to go out there and get a Cutter Gauthier. They just don't have the resources to do it. So they go out with, you know, their coaching staff, and they identify players that are late bloomers. They typically don't get in true freshmen. We talked about Jack Peer earlier, one of the rare exceptions for the squad, right? But they typically bring in the 20 to 21, 22-year-olds who have had time to marinate to kind of build their game, and they are a team that doesn't jump out at you with talent, but they play a cohesive system. They play a smart brand of hockey. They play physical. They forecheck well, and they defend really well too. Again, Brett Larson was just named. The entire coaching staff with David Carl, they're going to go run it back with the World Junior Championship squad this next season. So his name is out there, and I do think you have the right coach, and I do think they understand their limits, but they also know that the expectation is, we're an NCAA contender every single year. This is the first season under Brett Larson that they did not make the NCAA tournament. And for a school that as a whole, right, has had some struggles in terms of, you know, enrollment and money issues, the Herbrooks National Hockey Center needs a ton of upgrades, including their chilling system. I think they have put together a formula where they're competitive year in and year out in arguably the toughest league in all of college hockey. They still attract great teammates. They've got a wonderful culture up there. And it's a program that's run with open arms. I mean, you could pull Brett Larson, Dave Shyack, assistant coaches, Clark Custer, you could grab any one of them and they'll talk hockey with you for hours, having a beer. That's just who they are. They're great inviting people. And I think you combine that into one big picture. It's an attractive program that plays attractive opponents in the NCHC with also some dips here and there with the Gophers, St. Thomas. There's great rivalries with Duluth, North Dakota. Also, Western Michigan's been someone they've seen quite a bit this past season. So they're a great program. They really, really are. And I think when you look at the next 3 to 4 years, if there is a question mark copy, and that is the NIL, right? And that is, what is that going to do overall to college hockey? I fear more for schools like Bemidji State. I fear more for, like, say, Lake Superior State with Minnesota State, Mankato, you know, the schools that really are mostly Division II, which St. Cloud is. So how does that change their landscape? Here's the thing with St. Cloud. Again, they've already been kind of doing it. They're not overstretching their bounds to try to attract players that they feel like they can't get. They have identified a system for their talent. And year in and year out, this team is competitive. And even for a bad year this year, they still finished 17th in the country. So I think they're going to be just fine.
That's fair. And I mean, how important do you think to, you know, we'll even narrow it down now to next season. Big fan of yours, young Maxie. Maxie asked if the departure of Ben Steves from University of Minnesota Duluth is going to have major impacts on St. Cloud being able to make a jump.
It will certainly jump their penalty kill numbers. That'll be nice. But you can say that with the rest of the NCHC. Ben Steves was just unreal with his shot and his release. But tell Max, we can talk about it later. No, I'm kidding. No, at the end of it, I with UMD, right, and St. Cloud's kind of in the same boat. You know, you're when you get those high level type names, you'll take them for as long as you can. Typically with St. Cloud, you're seeing guys 4 years. Again, Jack was here for three, right? You had Zach Okabe, who is also now with the Cleveland Monsters, the subsidiary of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's making his first professional playoff roster tonight as we speak. So they're churning out pro talent too. It may not be the biggest names, but at the end of the day, these are kids that when they commit to St. Cloud, they're here for almost the full college hockey experience, which if you talk to, you know, former players or even current players, they say that it's one of the best times of their life in St. Cloud with that program, that culture there. Again, they're a competitive program.
Parties. It's all.
Yeah. Although that's calmed down quite a bit since, you know, the heydays back 10 years ago.
I'm sure.
But it's still a fantastic place to play hockey. Again, it's a great building. There's a great crowd that's always on hand. And you have one of the best broadcast programs in the country that get to showcase it on local television. So it's great overall, and the team will be fine.
No, that is a fact. And talking about alums gone pro, there is a correct answer here. But curious for your opinion, I guess, if it sways from fact.
Mm-hmm.
Best active professional hockey player that is a St. Cloud State alum?
Jeff Finger. No. right now it's Ryan Poehling. You didn't like that answer. You wanted Charlie Lindgren.
Charlie Lindgren is absolutely the answer. I'm sorry. No matter how you slice it, that is the correct answer. I do actually love Ryan Poehling, and I'm very sad that he didn't get more of a look with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but it happens. They also didn't give much time to
Pittsburgh,
Petlick, but whatever.
Pittsburgh is in the midst of a transition too. And no, Poehling, and I'm actually going to counter that. I think Poehling's gotten more looks than probably people would normally give because he was a first round pick.
No, league wide, yes. I'm just saying since he was acquired by Pittsburgh before being sent out, like, there, he didn't really get much of a look. But no, I agree. If you're a first round pick, people will give you a ton of chances. And yes, but I mean, very talented player. But dude, Charlie Lindgren single-handedly carried Alexander Ovechkin to the postseason. Like, that guy, and Jeff Merrick, who I think is the best in the business when it comes to covering the NHL. He will always say that the Hart Trophy should go to the $1 million a year goaltender that starts and dominates. That is Charlie Lindgren this year. But I also think that I don't think this is just a blip. I'm not saying he's going to be this every year. I think he's a no shit at minimum 1A.
I agree with that. And it's even more impressive when you look at the Capitals roster. I mean, beyond Alex Ovechkin, that's an older roster. Defensively, kind of a mess, right? And Lindgren as a southpaw, right? I actually asked Kyle Brodziak this once way back when he was still with the Wild, because they had Josh Harding. And I asked, hey, in practice, does it really throw you off if it's right or left? And it's funny, Tom Gilbert, another Bloomington native and Wild defender at the time, was like, nah, not really. But then Brodziak's like, no, I think it does. I think sometimes if it's, you know, you pick your spots, you know, you forget the gloves on the other side, it does kind of throw you off sometimes. I'm not saying that's what it is, but no, Lindgren played out of his mind to get them there. I mean, 2 weeks before the playoffs, I think everybody had written them off, and myself included. And he carried them there. Now, granted, you know, they were sort of exposed for who they were depth-wise, but for Charlie Lindgren, right, he started over a Stanley Cup winning goaltender named Darcy Kemper, right, who has, shall we say, more championship accolades, if you want to go just by what's on paper. That tells you all you need to know.
All right. He won that behind an absolute wagon in Colorado.
I know. He didn't have to do anything.
And have a pulse, like, you're good. But but it's a fair point. Like, that's a $5 million a year goaltender that they threw to the pine in lieu of Charlie Lindgren, and that's hard for teams to do.
It is.
Like, you're even seeing with the Wild, like, John Merrill is getting play over calling up a guy like Damon Hunt. To Damon Hunt's more deserving, but they don't want to do it because of the cap situation and because of just the implications of, now this guy's on a one-way deal. He's making a little over a mil. No, we just can't do it, you know?
Yep. John Merrill, and I think you and I and Judd would agree with this, is that he was there to, his contract ends right when cap hell ends. It's a cheap contract, right? That's what he's there for. Now, as Russo pointed out, I think he did play better down the stretch. No, better
back half.
for John Merrill, though, right? He's a guy that is not the best skater. Sometimes still you kind of wonder what the decision making is when he's got the puck on his stick, but oh well, they make it work, right? I don't know. So I don't know. Like it's tough. And you know, to Damon Hunt, right? He might be the first call up, right? I think in the depth chart, Jack Peart number two. That's my guess. So
no, that is fair. All right. Final thing then, just more holistically across the MNCAA landscape. It is weird because I've kind of been conditioned over the last 5-6 years that the Gophers weren't really the Gophers. Like they were one of four really good Minnesota teams that were all kind of jousting, and they all had their different calling cards. Like Gophers definitely have the higher end talent and all the Mr. Hockeys, but all four teams had their virtues. Now we're back to Gophers are firmly established. They are going to contend for at least the foreseeable future here of the next 2 to 4 years. And they will be making runs for Frozen Fours throughout that time. Do you see another team in Minnesota that over the course of the next, again, we'll say 2 to 4 years, could make a bid for a Frozen Four? Who's most likely? And give me your reasoning.
So if there's one thing that you missed early on in this, is that you said that Ryan Stieg was the only person pumping St. Thomas. I was too. I saw their development with Rico Blasio. Mind you, he took a Miami squad to a national title game, right? He knows how to recruit. He's recruited here in this market, essentially the Midwest, and got a Miami squad, which we all know with their recent history, it's been rough, to be a highlight college hockey program. I think there's two Minnesota squads, and I'm not saying that because I'm Homer, not to give it away, but I think St. Thomas and St. Cloud are well positioned to make runs. Again, St. Thomas, they've gotten really, really nice recruits. They really do well in the transfer portal. It seems like they're a CC 2.0. They get the guys that are left over from Colorado College, which, mind you, under Chris Mayotte, who I adore as a head coach, by the way. I've talked to him many times. He is a delightful human being and a hell of a coach down there in Colorado Springs. But for St. Thomas and what Rico has done in a short amount of time, it's still blasphemy that they can't compete for an NCAA tournament for another couple of seasons. I think they tried to petition. I don't get it, right? I really don't get it. I think they did try to petition to end it. It failed. Again, I don't really see the reason why, but when they do come out of it, they're going to have a really nice barn, number one. They've got the resources. And once that building is finally built, which, mind you, will be, I think, part basketball, part hockey, but you're going to have as much of a draw, at least in Minnesota's, facilities-wise, as North Dakota does. I'm not comparing the two facilities, but I think it's going to be that shiny new toy that if you're a Minnesota State high school hockey player and you're doing the rounds here in Minnesota, that's going to be a nice selling point. So St. Thomas, and then
are there going to be swastikas all over too? Or
God, I hope not.
if we're going to compare it directly to the Ralph Engelstad, I mean,
right? Yeah,
fantastic, unmatched facilities, scumbag human.
Yep.
We can leave it there.
We can leave it
there. I will never argue with North Dakota fans about how beautiful their facilities are. It's such a cool rink.
Yep. 11,000 seating. Calling a game up there in a spotlight corner in the second level was an interesting resume addition to when I've called some games, but their press box is hilariously small for how big that building is. Put it that way.
Right.
But back here in Minnesota, right? St. Thomas is going to be there, but I think honestly, St. Cloud, just because I think I said they found their niche with recruiting, and you give this recruiting class coming in some time. St. Cloud has always been really good at identifying players in the transfer portal. They got, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, but another defenseman from Northern Michigan, who is going to be the pseudo Anhorn replacement. So at the end of the day, I think St. Cloud can make another run. I really do. They've got the right coaching. I think they get enough talent to make a run. The big question is can they have a season more consistent? These last two, it's been up and down, but if they can find the consistency up and down their lineup and get a little bit more depth, I think they can do it. I really do.
No ties. Which one of them gets there first?
St. Thomas.
Wow. And I'm curious for them, like once the arena is built, is kind of that big, like,
yep,
we're here transition period. Like there's no more mistaking it. Do they stand to benefit more by being like basically Mankato 2.0 and just consistently dominate the CCHA, or are they making a jump for the NCHC the second it's available?
So it's interesting, right? Because there's two parts to this. A, the NCHC is expanding this year to include Arizona State, so they jump from 8 to 9 squads, right? Mm-hmm. Do you see some similarities between this? Arizona State, a Division I school in Holt, they've got the resources. Their hockey team makes money. So they're one of the three Division I sports at that university that actually pull in a positive amount. They're pretty competitive. Now, I think they're going to have a down year this year because the gauntlet of a weekend to weekend out tough opponent, I think, is going to shock the system a little bit. But it's a team and a university that got finances in order. They got a great building. They're broadcast ready. So you have all the attractions that the NCHC is looking for. I'll give you a little bit of an insight here coming from the NCHC too. They have actually reached out to Hockey East and have asked for what the requirements are for ESPN Plus in terms of broadcast essentially levels. They are exploring potentially at some point. I'm not sure if it would be NCHC just linking with ESPN or would there be a broadcast rights deal, but they have looked into it. I will tell you that. And St. Thomas, you know what they do. They just buy the base model coupe, right? They get all the bells and whistles. They get the highest trim level. They get the platinum level. That facility in the Twin Cities market, which the NCHC has been eyeing for, there could be a situation like you mentioned, Hoppy, where I think for St. Thomas, if they want to be best beneficial, I'm not sure if it's at first to dominate the CCHA, which I think they will, as early as next season. I'm going to call it right now. But I do think if you were to make the jump into the NCHC, tougher opponents week in, week out, and you got that facility, the NCHC would welcome the Twin Cities market. Now you have options for broadcast rights because now you have Fox 9 Plus, who is already a partner with St. Cloud. St. Thomas is locked in on them, but now you can have a little bit of leverage with some broadcast rights. So there is, shall we say, some smoke that's burning here in the Twin Cities for the NCHC and St. Thomas to eventually start chatting with each other, and it could happen in a couple of years. I do think it's at minimum 5 years from now, though.
That is juicy. And it's funny because with everything that's being talked about right now about broadcast, like you're familiar with the Bad Luck Brian meme?
Yep.
Verbal meme. NCHC lands big broadcast deal.
Yep.
Valley Sports North.
Yep, pretty much. Nope.
It's a disaster. The Minnesota Twins are an absolute joke of an organization. Thank God I don't care about baseball or I would be miserable.
It's crazy too, right? Because to continue on the NCHC probe, their deal with CBS, I believe, either ends this year or next year. It's next year. So there's a couple of different things that are going to have to be figured out from the conference standpoint. And also just because we're humans of, you hate odd numbers, they're not staying at 9 for long. They're just not. So
math. We love
math. That's it. It's eventually want to expand, right? Because at the end of the day, the NCHC has also been behind the scenes collaborating with the Seattle Kraken for one of the next Frozen Four bids. I can tell you that.
That sounds fun. Bye bye.
Yep. Cool. And North Dakota would be the host. And from what I understand is that there's been mutual interest both from the league, meeting the NCHC. North
Dakota would be the host in Seattle. That's hilarious.
Well, they were the host in Tampa too.
I suppose.
Or was that Wisconsin?
That was Wisconsin.
Yeah, no.
Which is also weird. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with that.
And North Dakota, I mean, come on. They like to flex that financial muscle they have, right? It's the oil money. Come on. It sounds like the city of Seattle and the NCHC have had at least preliminary meetings on that. And from what we have learned, at least from some of the college hockey meetings down in Florida, is that it sounds like there's been a discussion about regional home sites, but it sounds like through 2028, which is the next two Frozen Four cycles that have yet to be determined, 27 and 28. It sounds like the current format, meaning neutral sites, will be continued. So if that's the case, I would expect Seattle to be a place that throws in a bid for the next two.
I might not live to see that because 2 years from now is in Vegas. So,
mm-hmm. And honestly,
I hope everyone else enjoys it.
And honestly, Scott, whoever comes after Vegas is going to have to match a bar that is not going to be.
No one wants that. No one wants to be the next one.
Because Vegas, and I've been to three Golden Knights games down at T-Mobile Arena. It's just a different atmosphere. They really have nailed their in-game presentations. Just everything from start to finish is exciting. It's fun.
Will that be available to the Frozen Four?
So that's the key, right? What can Vegas do? Now, it's a under the radar, I think, at least for our hockey purists, hockey town. It really is. It has taken over. The locals do not like the Raiders because they're, you know, the Passover team, and they're going to have the same sort of opinion on the Athletics when and if they actually get there.
Well, so, and success does everything.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, I think Vegas will flex the muscle that it can, because at the end of the day, for them to even throw a bid in with really no college hockey around them, I mean, the two closest would now be Arizona State and what, Air Force and Fort Collins.
Hey, dude, as soon as they say the CHL guys are eligible, we're going to get all the Pac-10 teams. So who knows?
Who knows? And to go on top of that, you know, you do wonder with some of these club teams out there, ACHEs like UNLV, San Diego State, UCLA, Oregon, whether they, if the Frozen Four receive well, which I think it will be, it's going to be a destination people are going to go to no matter what, right? You do wonder if the next frontier for college hockey is to finally get to the West Coast. I do wonder in the next couple of years, barring some of the other challenges the game that is currently facing them, such as the NIL and, you know, some of the rule situations. I do hope that sparks some of these programs to actually make the jump to Division One, because
I think it's going to help those teams.
And that's the hope, right? Because UNLV, from everything that I've heard, was supposed to come out years ago. But mind you, Bill Foley, who owns the Vegas Golden Knights, they wanted them to essentially win the ACHA National Championship. They fell short. Now, mind you, youth hockey in Nevada has exploded. Before the Golden Knights came in 2017, there was a fewer than 100 registered players. Now there's over 1,100. There was only, a couple of rinks. Now there's 8 and plans to build 4 more for a total of 12 just in the Las Vegas area. So it's a sport that's booming in popularity. When you win a Stanley Cup, that helps too. But I do hope that
if they don't win another one.
Right. But also you do hope that when college hockey makes a stop in a couple of years, that is what will entice some of these programs to make the jump to D1 and to continue to further the expansion of college hockey, which it needs to continue to grow. It needs to get to the West Coast and then eventually Southeast, but that's well down the line. But the West Coast is the next frontier.
Oh, for sure. Well, dude, especially with them all merging into the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Money.
And at the end of the day, Hoppy, you know, there was a thought before Arizona State joined the NCHC that they would kind of be the forefront of a West Coast college hockey conference. I think Arizona State waited as long as it could as an independent, knowing the financials and the survivability when you're an independent. I mean, I don't know how the Alaska schools do it. I really don't. They've had such a disadvantage all over across the board. It's insane, but they do it, right? They didn't want to have that uncertainty. So they joined a power college hockey conference. They're going to be insulated from that. They've got a pretty decent program, although 20 wins, Hoppy, that doesn't automatically qualify you for the playoffs either. But that didn't happen. So you do wonder, you know, with some of these realignments, and it's essentially, if we do get some of these West Coast teams, would the NCHC expand? Would it be Big Ten that would expand for their college hockey, right? Mm-hmm. I would hope it's one of the two, because they're the most stable college hockey conferences that are out there. But we're hopeful that just more teams just make the jump. That's what we're hoping for. And if it's with the Big Ten, I don't care. Let hockey continue to grow. If it's with the NCHC, who runs itself very well, they're financially very stable, yes, more is more, and I would be happy to welcome it with open arms.
Well, let's just throw them all in their own conference to start, and we'll do this semi-pro style. Top four teams get in the league.
And we will broadcast on ESPN 8 The Ocho, right?
Oh, yes. We like
that. That's how it's going to go down. So, but that also means back here at home, right, that your recruiting efforts are going to have to be even better. Arizona State is recruiting pretty well up here. Lindenwood has pulled a couple guys.
If I'm coming up in Minnesota hockey right now, and I'm not a guy getting a call from Minnesota, Denver, North Dakota, Wisconsin, I'm immediately going down and taking my official visit at ASU, and I'm probably never coming home. I'm just going to stay there after the visit. I'm just going to hide in someone's closet, and I am not coming back.
And now that they're in a conference, right, I think if you're freshman, sophomore in high school hockey right now, you're watching this team pretty closely, because if they do continue their success in the NCHC, even more attractive, right? Because you have all the perks you just mentioned, plus you got a competitive hockey squad that I think, you know, once they make an NCAA tournament, it might be 2 or 3 years before they do it at the earliest. What more could you ask out of a hockey program, really?
Do I have to fly coach? That's what I ask.
So if you're using a Delta chartered flight, everything is first class. There's no such thing as coach on those things. Just don't end up in the cockpit. That's the one thing. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy, though. It's troubling times for college hockey, right? Because as much as we talk and pump the tires about our teams, you know, there is some concerns about NIL. And like we mentioned, the smaller teams, I just hope that as college hockey expands, we're not doing that at the sacrifice of other schools that have been around for a while, have got storied programs, who have a history. So, and Scott Sanelin, to pump, you know, Veach's tires, has been very vocal about this for the past couple of
seasons. We're editing that out, but yeah,
go okay, ahead. Perfect. That's the power of video editing, right? It's great. At the end of that, you know, I want more, but I don't want it at the expense of these other programs too. So there is a roadmap. I don't know what that roadmap looks like.
Called the CHL.
Yes. The IHL. That was one. That was a thing back in the day, right?
It existed.
There was also the UHL, the United Hockey League. Oh, talk about a goon squad. My gosh. That was quite the league, if you remember that. But yeah, no. And if you open up to Canadian players, which I think they should, I really do think they should. I get that there was a purpose for it, but I think with the growth of the game, there is an attraction now to some college students also, that are across the
border. NIL, the dollar figures that the CHL kids get are fucking negligible.
Yes. But the thing is, like, that also means NCAA eligibility stuff too, right? Because if you play for a junior team, can't do it. So that might make a decision for some of these hockey players. So who knows? A lot of things could change. And it could affect my team, the Huskies, either one way or the other. It may not. Time will tell. But I think as we talked at the top of the show, the next 5 years, there's going to be a very rapidly changing landscape around college hockey, for better or for worse. And maybe we see both happen at the same time. Who knows?
There we go.
Beautiful.
Well, that does it. First recap we have here for the 2023-2024 season. Thank you, Nick, for joining and running damn near an hour. Holy crap. Appreciate it. And with how much we pumped the tires of St. Thomas this week, plan right now is that next week we are going to have Ryan Stieg talking a little bit more about UST.